सोच विचार के साथ मेरा नाम नदीम उल हक है
और मेरा नाम अंजुम अल्ताफ है।
वेलकम टू सोच विचार। टुडे वी हैव मिस्टर इरफान कादर विद अस। इरफान कादर इज अ वेल नोन पर्सनैलिटी इन पाकिस्तान। मोस्ट ऑफ यू प्रॉब्ली नो अबाउट हिम। ही इज अ लॉयर ऑफ कंसिडरेबल रिप्यूट, बीइंग द अटॉर्नी जनरल ऑफ पाकिस्तान, held many official titles as well as a senior lawyer in the country, knows a lot about law in Pakistan. So Irfan Saab, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Irfan Saab,
and kind of you for the compliments that you have given to me.
Well deserved, well deserved.
I don't think I have that kind of comprehension because the more years that I have spent in this legal profession, especially the profession while appearing in the courts, even as Attorney General, unfortunately, I think I've unlearned the law also, whereas the learning part was at the initial stage, yes, I was very focused, but as I gained more experience in the profession, I felt that we are in a stage where people are unlearning the law rather than, and because of the chaotic judicial precedents that have been rendered by this court one after the other, and we will talk on those as well. So,
Irfan Saab, I have a fundamental issue, just like a pure Pakistani citizen. I'm not a lawyer, I'm an economist. My question to you is very simple. Why is it that our judicial system is so slow in offering justice? And why is it that our laws are so outmoded? My feeling is that we have not revised the penal code, we have not revised the CPC. I mean, almost all the laws that I look at are from 1860, 1890, 1900, whatever. Don't we need to modernize the law given technological change and globalization, etc.?
When we talk of legal system of a country of the size of Pakistan and the plethora of laws that we have, it is impossible for anyone to have a complete comprehension of all the laws and to make a statement that our laws are inadequate unless we go into specifics. And the unfortunate part is that laws are not all that inadequate, because most of these laws which we have inherited from Britishers and even the subsequent legislation, these are all based on a rational basis. And invariably in every law one tries to reason out, one tries to be reasonable. And in fact, it is the common sense which is then codified into laws. And once we say that a certain law is not workable or it is bad, then we must talk in specifically with regard to each law.
Okay.
And we have made certain changes in various laws. There have been amendments in the Penal Code. There have been amendments in the Evidence Act. In fact, in Evidence Act, we had the Evidence Act of Lord Macaulay, which was came in around 1878, and in 1985 we brought in Kanune Shahadat. Interestingly, Kanune Shahadat is replica of the old Evidence Act. There is no difference at all, except that the nomenclature has been Islamized and they have named it as Kanune Shahadat, and they have changed the sequence of sections, and in doing so they have destroyed the real essence and the beauty of the Evidence Act. And the few sections that they have added in the name of Islam, they have led to more confusion and more chaos than had it not been amended. And then the other thing is that when it comes to legislation in Pakistan, it is very unfortunate that our legislators do not have the requisite competence, and the result is that most of the laws that are enacted in Pakistan and most of the ordinances that are promulgated, the real force behind all these is the executive, and there is very little contribution of the legislators, and that is also one reason that we have not progressed in bringing about good legislation after the creation of Pakistan.
Shantha, my problem is, as I said, that being an economist, when I look at economic transactions, because the way I look at it is GDP is a set or an aggregate of economic transactions. The more transactions in the country, the more the growth, the more people get employed, better off people are. I find economic transactions are so slow in this country. Buying property takes you days, or weeks even. Doing other transactions, very complicated. Most transactions end up being in court. So is that a fault of the legal system? Why do we have so many cases of such trivial nature? I believe courts are clogged with property cases and things like that.
I feel that the level of integrity in the system in which these laws were initially enacted or legislated, those people were of different frame of mind. They were different people altogether. And these laws perhaps were not designed to cope with the people which we have today in Pakistan. Because no system is bad, laws are not bad, but those who implement the laws, those who follow the law, if they start hoodwinking the law, then you can well imagine what is going to happen to that law. So law should not only be reasonable, should not only be good, but should be capable of least abuse. Mm-hmm. Perhaps our system today, our laws are not capable of that least abuse, and they are now being freely abused. They are being abused by the judges, by the lawyers, by the people. And the clever litigant, they know much more ways and means to hoodwink the law, to abuse the law, than most of the judges who did not have a good name, or most of the lawyers who generally are not regarded men of high integrity. So the system, yes, we have miserably failed in bringing about a system which is capable of least abuse, and we have abused the Constitution. We have abused our laws, and that is one of the biggest dilemmas that Pakistan today is facing.
Yeah, then, for example, I see also appointments. You make any appointment in the government, like I see the appointments of vice chancellors, or I see the appointments of CEOs of companies, almost all of them end up in court.
Yes.
There is so much litigation on appointments. There is so much litigation that I think the government comes to a paralysis because you just can't appoint people. So, how do you...
Sir, the problem is that my experience tells me that internally, within every organization, there are deep-rooted rivalries. And those rivalries and internal dissensions, they run wild. Resultantly, in a quest of getting into a higher position or succeeding in life, all that results in great strife between various people. For example, people who are in the district management group, who are in foreign service, who are in other services of Pakistan, there is a cutthroat competition. Yeah. And because of that cutthroat competition, that whenever they have differences, invariably they come to the courts. They come to the courts.
And
that is one of the failings of our bureaucracy, because our bureaucracy also has this internal divide. And if internal divide continues and they continue to fight amongst each other and they continue to bring their matters in courts, then surely judges also get dragged into these disputes. And judges also have their likes and dislikes in bureaucracy, and resultantly the judicial precedents that are then that which the judicial precedents that come out, those judicial precedents are chaotic, faulty, and not strictly within the four corners of reasonableness which law generally should have.
But Iswansab, there's a question that comes to my mind. I see what you're saying, and I think it's a valid point that partly the problem is that we ourselves, there's a cultural problem, and the cultural problem is sort of contaminating or spilling over into the judiciary, and therefore, you know, this is happening because a culture has become litigious and a culture has become... But I think also is that that's kind of like a chicken and egg question. I can also hypothesize that a good judiciary and a good legal framework should cut down this kind of a litigious sort of society or a conflict in society. The purpose of judiciary is to cut down conflict in society. But if the judiciary gets involved in the conflict, then where are we going?
Your question is very interesting and extremely relevant. And I would say, yes, that is our problem. That on one hand, as I initially said, that the system should be such that nobody should be able to abuse it. Our judiciary should be such that it should not be abused. But unfortunately, the ground reality today is much different. Because I remember about 2 decades ago when I was appearing as a Supreme Court lawyer, I would feel very confident, especially in the Supreme Court, because in the Supreme Court, we always had a bench of 3 judges or 4 judges or 5 judges. Mostly it was 3 judges. And we knew that 3 judges cannot concurrently go wrong. The formation of benches that the Britishers had given us, it was such a good system that 3 judges could not go wrong, concurrently go wrong. So I would generally, my client would ask me what is going to be the outcome of the case, and mostly my prediction was right. Around more than 90% I used to predict that this is going to be the outcome, because that was what was logical. And one judge may go wrong, but 3 could never go wrong. Like when a jumbo jet flies, it flies on 4 engines. One engine can crash, the other engine can go down, but 4 engines simultaneously can. That is why we seldom see these aeroplanes crashing. But in Pakistan, somehow all the 4 engines now are on fire. And why? Because it is the lawyers' movement, and especially when General Musharraf uprooted Iftikhar Chaudhary and many judges and their subsequent restoration, when they were brought back, then somehow everything became extra legal. General Musharraf also did not act according to law. General Musharraf removed around 30 to 40 judges of our superior judiciary in violation of Article 209 of the Constitution. Because under the Constitution, no judge can be removed except through the Supreme Judicial Council. But in order to circumvent that, a provisional constitution order removed around 30 to 40 judges. Now, when these judges were restored, these judges also in vengeance took the law in their own hands, and they removed around 60-70 judges of the superior judiciary, and that was also in violation of Article 209. So violating Article 209 was held by this judiciary to be usurpation of power by General Musharraf. But if General Musharraf usurped power by removing 30 judges in violation of Article 209, then these judges, who were all PCO judges, they removed mostly non-PCO judges, then they committed aggravated usurpation, and they committed, if Musharraf is now being made guilty of that, is being tried for treason, I would say on the same principle, these judges should then be tried for high treason. So in law, when we weigh judicial precedents and when we advance our arguments, we come across not double standards, but multiple standards. Because of these multiple standards in our legal precedents, the entire legal order of the country is now nosediving and has become extremely, extremely chaotic. And we see this manifestation in a number of cases. For example, in the recent times, we have seen this Panama case. In Panama case, we see that a former prime minister now openly attacks the Supreme Court. And whatever he's saying, obviously, maybe there may not be much moral justification for him to say all this, because his own conduct in the previous regime was not good. And he was also responsible for bringing Supreme Court into these matters. But many things that he says are also not all that legally incorrect. And because of these things, the legal order becoming so topsy-turvy, I don't see Pakistan recovering from this unless we reconstitute our judiciary, we reconcile these judicial precedents by bringing those cases, by revisiting those cases in larger benches of the Supreme Court. It is only then that this chaos can be brought to an end. And the most unfortunate part is that a new jurisprudence that has developed, the new jurisprudence of Pakistan, according to that, now they say, when any organ of the state is not functioning, and who is to determine that? Judiciary says, we will determine that. And in that determination, they say, if some organ or some organization or some institution is not performing at its optimum, then we will fill that space and we will do that job. We are constrained to do that because we are the guardians of the fundamental rights of the people. Now, if this is the thinking of this judiciary, then I am afraid tomorrow people can also say that judiciary has also not delivered, and there's a huge backlog of cases, and a person doesn't get justice in his lifetime. And then tomorrow the army chief can say, okay, we will now decide cases of judiciary. And the other organizations of this country can also say that since judiciary is not doing their work, or legislature can say, if they are doing not doing their work, we will do their work. So when we will be driven into such a situation which is close to anarchy, then might is right is going to prevail. And whoever has the might, because nobody is seeking refuge in law, but everybody wants to seek refuge in their respective might, then in that case, surely we know who has the might.
Well, Fun Sahab, I think you're absolutely right. We have reached a point of that anarchy.
Yes.
I mean, this election, what we are seeing right now, all the organs are fighting with each other. All institutions are kind of clashing. Now, hopefully the election gives us a new hope. And hopefully the election will throw up new leadership, whoever that might be. I don't mean to, you know, side with anyone. But whoever that might be, and supposing we get good leadership, let's just hope for a minute. Let's just hope that Allah prevails and gives us good leadership. How would you advise them to go about reforming the judicial system? My, again, contention or my argument would be that our judicial system also is sitting in the 19th century, same judicial system that Lord Macaulay or somebody left for us, and we've not quite reformed it. Do we need to reform it, or is it okay? And if we want to reform it, how do we reform it?
Certainly, judicial system in Pakistan and the laws, they all need to be revamped, and we need to bring about proper amendments, and all that is necessary. But the thing which is of much greater necessity at this time, which is more needed, is that we need to have a judiciary which is legally appointed, not a judiciary which is there because General Kiani forced the government, or circumstances, I won't use the word force, because the circumstances were such that an extra constitutional and extra legal restoration had to be resorted to. And by means of an executive order, a chief justice was restored, which was not done in a constitutional or legal manner. And subsequent appointments were also defective. Therefore, the first and foremost thing that we need to do is that we need to have a judiciary where people are appointed in a just, fair and legal manner. And apart from that, a judiciary over which there is consensus among all the stakeholders. And when I talk of stakeholders, I mean the all the political parties should have consensus, their consensus, all the provinces. And army has always been in reality a very important stakeholder in all this. So I think all of them together, and this can be accomplished through the next parliament, through lawmaking. There can be few constitutional amendments. The entire present judiciary should be reconstituted. Those people who are up to the mark, who are honest, they should be retained. Those people whose appointments are improper.
But our system, kya you think, yehi rehna chahiye? Should we have like Supreme Court, High Court?
Yes, yes, ma'am. You are right. the biggest problem that we now face as far as superior courts are concerned. First, I'll take up superior courts, then I'll go on to the subordinate judiciary. In the superior courts, a lot of time is being consumed by of the courts of high courts as well as Supreme Court in matters pertaining to the executive. And that is, number one, it's the writ jurisdiction, and number two, it is those constitutional cases and those differences and the disputes among the politicians. And all those disputes come to the courts, and courts are flooded with those matters also. And instead, that court should be, deciding their own matters, which are purely matters to be adjudicated upon by courts. They are now mostly dealing with the matters where executive could not perform or executive could not give justice to people, and they had to file cases against the government. So, system should be such that such cases should be decided at the level of the governments, and they should seldom come to the courts. For example, in Lahore High Court alone, 60% of the cases pertain to police, and the rest is pertaining to civil litigation and others. But 60% alone constitute the total number of cases concern the police. Then they concern the revenue departments, and then the other departments. So these 60 to 70% cases can be done away with if we have a system of ombudsmen who can rectify these grievances, and there should be full-fledged secretariat. And we don't need to have one provincial ombudsman or one federal ombudsman, but we should have a team of ombudsmen, at least 10 to 15 in Punjab, and same number of ombudsmen or deputy ombudsmen at the federal level. And all these matters which now form part of the writ jurisdiction, all this should be given to these ombudsmen. They should administer this jurisdiction so that this too much pressure on the courts, this could be removed. And then obviously when the number of cases will come down, then we need to bring in more judges also. And we have got galaxy of youngsters coming up. They are bright, they are brilliant. And I have no qualm in saying that I have come across many young students who have experience of around 3 years, 4 years, done their LLM from reputed universities. I have interacted with them. And most of these students are extremely bright, and their level of intellect is much better than the intellect that we have mostly in our superior courts these days. These youngsters are so smart, they are so good, but they are being discouraged in the profession. It takes donkey's years for them to become an advocate of the High Court. There are a lot of bottlenecks created in their way. Hurdles are being created for people to get into the Supreme Court. In India, for example, in our neighboring country, once you become an advocate, you are enrolled as an advocate of the High Court, you are automatically enrolled as an advocate of the Supreme Court. But in Pakistan, the incompetence at the top has taken over in such a manner that they want to monopolize the entire profession of law. And the judges, the bench and the bar have also got mixed up. And in any system exercising Westminster-type model of democracy or judicature, Westminster-type judicature, in that system, bench is always a check on the bar and bar is a check on the bench. And that is the beauty of the system, and that is why the system cannot be abused. After the lawyers' movement, they've all got mixed up. And court only encourages those lawyers who know what the court wants them to say. And any lawyer who brings out the inconsistencies in their jurisprudence, court is not ready to resolve those today. And that is one of the biggest reasons that we see our Chief Justice often becoming emotional and making promises. Aur wo kasme khate hain ki main apni maa ki kasam kha raha hu aur main apne bachon ki kasam kha raha hu. Ye sari baatein. So all this is happening because the jurisprudence has become chaotic.
But even ye jo Supreme Court hai, should it only be like in America, like a constitutional court, or should it be like ki bhai rights wagaira ko guard kar raha hai? Or alternatively, for example, the American Supreme Court has a very clear agenda. They will take on cases that they like. They won't take on everything that they decide in the case they're going to take at the beginning of the year, and they're clear their calendar by the end of the year. ठीक है, ये बड़ी इंपॉर्टेंट चीज है. हमारे यहाँ क्यों नहीं, वाई कांट वी डू समथिंग लाइक दिस? वाई इज इट दैट रेंट केस विल गो टू द सुप्रीम कोर्ट? हाउ मेनी अपील्स डू वी हैव? शुड वी हैव वन अपील, टू अपील, थ्री अपील? आई मीन, वाई डज एवरी कोर्ट हैव टू गो टू द केस, हैव टू गो टू सुप्रीम कोर्ट? कुछ प्रोसीजर इशू भी हो रहे, आई मीन टू से एक और इशू जो है प्रोसीजर का, फॉर एग्जाम्पल हमारे यहाँ स्टे बड़े आराम से मिल जाती है. You can get a stay on anything. The second thing is, हमारे यहाँ continuous बड़ी जल्दी मिल जाती है. You can go, a lawyer can go to court and say, I am not sick today, I haven't prepared my case, and he gets a continuous. Whereas we've seen, for example, the famous case of O.J. Simpson, that the judge would give no continuous. It had to happen every day.
I think the kind of social fabric that we have today, the kind of society that has evolved over the years in Pakistan, the level of integrity, the level of competence, and the level of intolerance that has got into our system, into our people. Given that kind of intolerance level and that kind of unruly elements which we now have in Pakistan, even American judges will be helpless in administering justice in Pakistan. Because I remember once a chief justice from another country was here, and I think that is his photograph. There he sits with me.
Okay.
And he had come to Pakistan on a private tour. And he met me. And he was then the Chief Justice of Malaysia. And in our informal conversation, I just asked him, I said, sir, what are your sitting hours in the Supreme Court? And when the court starts and when the court ends? He said, we don't have any fixed hours in the court. I said, sir, don't you have cases? Don't you have backlog? He said, no, we wait for the cases to come. And when number of cases accumulate over a period of 2 to 3 months, then we decide that we'll have our sittings on such and such week of such and such month. So this is where society is just, society is fair, where they tolerate each other, where they know how to live with each other, where they have civic sense. In our country, the basic thing is that we lack this kind of awareness which many developed countries or up-and-coming countries have. So no matter whatever system we have, unless we remedy this part of our social fabric and society and bring in these good values in them, till then the court system would continue to be abused and judges will also thrive in entertaining every matter, and this also makes them important also, because if you are inaccessible, if you are incompetent, somehow a bureaucrat or a judge becomes more of a nuisance, and if for his own self-aggrandizement also, then he has lot of room to maneuver to make himself make himself, I would say, self-aggrandizement, to indulge in self-aggrandizement. Yeah,
yeah. To make himself aloof from the people and hide behind aloof.
Not only aloof from the people, what I'm trying to say is that to gain undue favors.
Right. Achha, Mujib, I also think about it another way. If I look at the appointments thing, as you said, I mean, it's very important to appoint credible people as justices. And, you know, the US has a system, for example, which we are all familiar with, that judges appointed takes a long time for them to appoint, and the president doesn't appoint people himself. Well, process through which appointments come to him, then he appoints people, although Trump is doing some things very wrong. We'll leave that aside for a minute. But then the matter goes to the Senate, and the Senate actually has hearings, and the judge is present, open hearings. Media is present, everybody hears this, and then you appoint the judge after a very thorough examination by the Senate and the media, and it's open, transparent. We have nothing like this. Can we have a better appointment system? How do we handle the appointment? I mean, I find appointments a big problem everywhere. Vice chancellors are badly appointed. We appoint people badly everywhere.
I think let's confine ourselves to judges first. Your own perception is that in Pakistan, we don't get the best people in judiciary, and the manner in which people are appointed and the system that we have is not a transparent system.
Transparent and credible.
It does not undergo the kind of scrutiny that people get to these ports, that people get to these posts in America or other, as you have said, that everything is in front of the media, everything is open, everything is transparent, and people, anybody who is to be appointed, then is first of all, they nominate him, then there's a lot of discussion about him in the Senate, in the media and all that. Why can't we have it here? Or whether we have it here or we don't have it here. Now, I have myself been a member of the Judicial Commission, which appoints judges in the Superior Judiciary, High Courts and Supreme Court. And I remember that the Chief Justice of Pakistan completely controlled that Judicial Commission. Committee. Even today, he controls it completely. And I used to be the only voice different, having some difference of opinion, and whenever I would express it, the majority was not with me, and I wanted to rationalize everything, but nobody was interested in that because they had their own agenda. And I also told the then Chief Justice in my first meeting, I said that we are all in the Judicial Commission, surely you are the chairman, you are to regulate the proceedings, but as far as the deliberations are concerned, we have to reason out everything. And we should be guided more by the reason, and reason should be our chief and not the Chief Justice. Now, in normal course of events, I would never have said this in the first meeting. But since I had a fair impression that the Chief Justice was becoming autocratic and I knew that very little reason is going to be discussed, I wanted to bring into them that in future we must reason out things. And invariably in the appointments, the procedure is that Chief Justice, if it's appointment of a High Court judge, it is the Chief Justice who nominates a person, and all the members of the Judicial Commission cannot. Whereas in the Constitution, it is nowhere provided that a person is to be nominated by the Chief Justice. Now what happens, then an obscure person's name is suddenly brought to your notice that we have decided that Mr. ABC is now going to be appointed a judge of the Supreme Court or of the High Court. And if there are any objections, the members may raise objections. Now an obscure person who has not done much practice, who has not much experience, who is not even very sound academically, and in one meeting, how can we assess that what are the issues and what is wrong with him? We are nobody to object straight away without knowing anything. And once we say that it can't be done so soon, they say, no, we need to appoint judges quickly because otherwise matters will be delayed. And so in haste, these appointments are being made. And during that tenure of Justice Iftikhar Chaudhary, most of the appointments that were being made, that it was the Chief Justice who would agree to some name, the other judges would see his mood and would nod in the affirmative. Whatever the Chief Justice wanted, they would go accordingly. And this is how these appointments were made.
Judicial Commission never interviewed.
Judicial Commission
never interviewed the candidate.
Never interviewed the candidate. They did not even discuss that what is the background of the candidate or what kind of judgments is he going to write? What is his legal acumen?
Even in
the Judicial Commission is only sitting there to see whether the man, anybody has any fact in his knowledge about the person's tainted character. That is the only thing that the Judicial Commission is to see.
Even in Kenya,
yes,
I was surprised.
Yes,
I saw the interviews for the Chief Justice by the Judicial Commission on television. And they lasted about a week. Full.
I remember interviews. I told Justice Iftikhar Chaudhary in one of my meetings, I said that these meetings should be telecast.
Yeah.
They should not be in camera. Yeah. We should have, it should be in the open.
Right.
And to which he said, no, no, we can't do this, we can't do this. And everybody disagreed with me. And I was the lone voice.
But the thing
and
is, even in Kenya,
yes,
they have this open live. I saw this myself on television.
Exactly.
Many days, and all the candidates were there, and they were asked all kinds of questions. all kinds of questions, and the very civilized conversation took place. And I remember even there was an Ismaili judge, another judge, ethnic judge, all kinds of judges. And these were sitting judges, and they were interviewed at length. Okay, so that's one thing. What about the lower judges? Because we have an extreme dichotomy. The upper judiciary judges have all the power and the privileges. The lower judges, I go to their courtroom, they look terrible. Now, the houses look terrible. They are in a worse
interestingly, shape. Interestingly, in the lower judiciary, there is an examination. And this is, they take the examination of this judiciary can kya log ka imtihan hota hai PCS
PCS
they have their PCS examination and then they become civil judges and then they go up as additional session judges and so on. But in the higher judiciary there is absolutely pick and choose of the judge's choice and no examination. And in a way, if I may say that in Pakistan, the lower judiciary is a greater channel of merit as compared to superior judiciary, I don't think I am wrong. This is a hard fact. And this is a very sad state of affairs because we keep hearing the higher judiciary and the politicians that the higher judiciary must put the lower judiciary right. How can this kind of higher judiciary put the lower judiciary right, where people in lower judiciary come through an open competition? But as far as judges of superior courts are concerned, they don't come through that kind of competition. They are just picked and they are thrust upon us.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. But the lower judiciary now, let me focus. That's why I take your point on the superior judiciary. On the lower judiciary, a judge can be grade 16 or grade 50. How do you expect him to perform his duties seriously at that low level? Do we need a greater upgradation of the lower judiciary? Do we need more, attention?
Now there is nobody in grade 15, grade 16.
Really? Okay.
The people in grade 17, 18, 19 in the judiciary are getting much more salaries than their counterparts in the executive.
Okay.
And their salaries have been raised many folds.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as lower judiciary is concerned, their salaries are reasonably good. And in the higher judiciary, they are much better.
They're huge.
So it is not an issue of salaries
any
longer.
Okay.
The issue is now that the lower judiciary feels deprived that very few of them can make to the high court. And the level of competence of many of the civil judges and additional session judges is definitely better than our High Court and Supreme Court judges.
Mm-hmm.
But because of this lack of opportunities to go to the top, they are not happy with their lot. They are dissatisfied. And this is one grudge that they nourish against this entire system.
On economics, I've often thought, when I was in government, for example, I talked to some Supreme Court judges too. For example, the Supreme Court fixed the price of sugar. I was then in the government and the budget was totally, our budget was destroyed. Because when you fix the price of sugar, the subsidy element which the government had to give, and we had got the money to give that. We were in the fund program. We had a great amount of difficulty there. At the same time, for example, Supreme Court took some other economic decisions.
Petroleum prices. Yes,
very
they also
decision.
Took up that matter.
The question is it a judiciary informed on economics or not?
Now, firstly...
Or should it be informed on economics?
You see, these people academically have done mostly their LLBs.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the judges, including myself, I am also an LLB. So we've done our LLB. So we cannot claim that we are experts in economics or in medicine or in other branches of engineering or in other institutions of the country that we have some expertise. We don't have that kind of expertise. The courts have limited jurisdiction and their jurisdiction is that if somebody is required to do something by law and he's not doing that, court can only tell him to do that. But that thing is to be done by that organization or by any person at the helm of affairs in that organization, not by the judges. But here, as you say, that there have been instances where they have tried to fix sugar prices and where they have tried to delve into petroleum prices and that mechanism and how the oil companies are functioning. That is strictly not the function of the court. Mm-hmm. Now, there are few people who say that court can pass any order once a matter under Article 184.3, that is a matter which pertains to fundamental rights. Any question which involves fundamental right of the people, question of law involving fundamental right of the people, and Supreme Court has jurisdiction under Article 184.3, they club this article with another article which is known as Article 187. Article 187 says that Supreme Court can pass any order in the interest of justice under 184.3. Now, in the name of any order, they say that they may pass any order. But interestingly, they do not read the initial lines of Article 187 because Article 187 is subject to another article of the Constitution, which is Clause 2 of Article 175. And what does the clause, well, what does Clause 2 of Article 175 say? It says that no court shall have jurisdiction except which is conferred upon it by the Constitution or the law. Therefore, if the job of the Prime Minister is to be done by the Chief Justice, then it should be specifically provided in the Constitution that if the Prime Minister is not doing his job, then Chief Justice can do this job. If the job of a federal minister is to be done by the Chief Justice, or if the executive is to be run by the Chief Justice, then the Constitution should specifically provide that if the executive authorities will not perform their duties properly, then Chief Justice will perform those as of right. All these provisions are not there in the Constitution. They can't be there in the Constitution because all over the world there is a strict demarcation of powers, and separation of powers enjoins upon courts that they must remain within their domain. And Clause 3 of Article 175 itself says that judiciary will be separated from the executive. Earlier there were executive officers who had judicial powers, and those judicial powers were taken away and were given to judiciary. Today it is not the executive that is performing judicial job, but judiciary has now gone much further and they want to take over the executive, which is not the mandate of the Constitution at all.
The Constitution, constitutional theory, is separation of powers.
Now, yes.
Obviously, our Constitution also talks about separation of powers.
Yes.
So no one...
And another very important thing that I need to share with you is that there is a great misperception as if judiciary, to the exclusion of every other organ, is the interpretation, is the interpreter of our laws and the Constitution. It is not like that. The best interpreter of laws is the one who makes the law, not the one who follows the law. It is the parliament that makes the law. Then interpretation by the executive or by the judiciary, both are competent to interpret.
Right.
Although it is nowhere provided in the Constitution that laws will be interpreted by the judiciary, why it is not provided in the Constitution? Likewise, it is not provided anywhere in any law that law will be interpreted by the judiciary. It is not provided, but it is specifically provided that interpretation would be done by the Ministry of Law. It is provided. Why? Because judiciary, as the Constitution countenances, is to follow the law. It is to follow the law. Interpretation has not been specifically conferred on the judiciary, but since it has now become a widespread convention all over the world that judiciary does interpret the law when any dispute comes in the way of judiciary, but only to the extent of that dispute its interpretation is to be accepted. But if I am in government and I don't agree with that interpretation, I can always say that I'm not going to follow this because that interpretation has changed the law or the Constitution. Therefore, I refuse to follow that. And judiciary can do nothing. But lately, judges started misusing their contempt powers and have issued contempt notices to such bureaucrats who have not even followed the judicial precedent. Judicial precedent is always between the parties. it will not apply to other institutions. For example, if there is a case against the railway department, and that case was filed by Mohammad Hussain, and that was decided by the Supreme Court in favor of Mohammad Hussain,
right,
and a certain principle of law was laid down in that, the chairman railway may refuse to follow that principle in the case of Ali Hussain, saying that let this Ali Hussain also go to the Supreme Court. Let him also file a case. Let them give the same ruling. But I am not going to follow, because as chairman railway, I have to follow my statute. And this decision is against such and such provision of my statute. Or this decision is against such and such provision of the constitution. But lately, because of excessive use of contempt power, because in the last 7 to 8 years, more contempt notices have been issued in Pakistan than anywhere in the world. And apart from that, in these 7 years, the number of contempt notices and the contempt trap that have been laid against various officers, the number outruns the contempt notices cumulatively issued in the last 60 yeah. years of our existence.
Brilliant.
Mm. Yes.
Mm. Brilliant. Let me ask you another question on this. Two more interesting questions. One is, returning to economics, why are the courts averse to using expert witnesses? In the States, for example, most of my colleagues are offering expert witnesses. Most of my professors offer expert witnesses. Some people are making a full-time career of being an expert witness. Here, I find that the courts, I personally asked the Supreme Court judges when they did the sugar case, I said, look, call us. Let me be an expert witness. That's all. I'm not prevailing on you. I'm not saying anything. Hear my case out. If you disagree, fine. You still have the power to do whatever you like. But I find there's an aversion to getting expert witnesses by courts.
No, I mean, first of all, I may explain that Supreme Court is not a trial court.
It isn't, yeah.
High Court is also not a trial court. So when it comes to testifying in court, then the forum for testimony are the subordinate courts, neither the Supreme Court nor the High Court.
Fair enough.
And that is why Supreme Court seldom records evidence.
Okay.
It was to be recorded in very, very sparing cases, okay. seldom to be recorded in these proceedings, because the law with regard to this 184.3 and the other provisions, the Article 199, where High Court exercises jurisdiction, the consensus of the judges previously have always been that court is not to go into lengthy investigation of facts.
Okay.
Because court is not a trial court, neither it is an investigator.
Okay.
So all these things, expert witnesses, etc., should not come to the Supreme Court. They should be that this should be the domain of the lower courts.
Okay.
But as far as where it is necessary that these witnesses should be examined or they should be called, yes, I perfectly agree with you. They are very relevant in the evidence sect also. The expert witness, lot of veracity is to be attached to the opinion of experts, because that is the domain where they are the specialists, and an ordinary person or a judge doesn't have that kind of know-how or expertise to dwell on these subjects, and therefore they must seek benefit of expert witnesses.
Take the steel mill, for example. Now, yes. The steel mill cost us billions of rupees, right? I think we are giving like 30, 40 billion rupees a year to the steel mill. It was about to be privatized. Now, I even have reservations on the manner in which it was privatized, etc. And so, perhaps the court should have intervened or whatever. But if it did, it should have got some expert testimony. I mean, just to figure out what the case is. And unfortunately, they didn't. So, that's one area that concerns me. The other area that concerns me is that there are so many economic matters that come before the court. And I find this is where I want to go to the Judicial Academy now. We've set up a number of these Judicial Academies. We've got 5 Judicial Academies around the country. And I find, again, that they're not training the judges in economics. And a large majority of your cases are economic transactions, property disputes, contract disputes, so many other government policy disputes. Yet the judges are not trained in economics, nor do they have expert witness, nor do the judicial academies take it up. Is there some judicial academy reform that you would suggest or not?
I think this is a very important aspect that you highlighted. Because invariably anywhere in the world, if you are to seek a job, you are to eventually start flying the planes, then you need to be trained properly before you fly a plane. Before you start performing your surgical operations, you need to be trained how to conduct an operation. But unfortunately, there is no formal training to judges or even to lawyers prior to their getting into the legal profession or prior to their getting on the bench. And you are talking of training in economics. I would say, yes, they must be trained in economics, but their basic training should be how to decide cases, how to write judgments, how to present.
So even that is not done in the judicial.
Even that is not done either in the judiciary. No, these people, when they join judiciary, they have had no training in this regard. Any lawyer joining legal profession also has no clue as to how is he going to contest a case in the court. There is no training.
So what is the Judicial Academy doing then?
Now, Judicial Academy, these untrained people are trying to train the people in the lower judiciary. And most of those youngsters, they already know more than these people. Interestingly, because I've had the occasion of delivering lectures in the Judicial Academy also and in various other training institutes of the Punjab government and the federal government. And I have come across remarkable people. And in fact, in one of my lectures in the Judicial Academy, it was so interesting. And they were asking me such intelligent questions that I was at a loss that many of them are definitely no less than anybody in the superior judiciary, perhaps better.
Right.
And now, untrained people are there to train those who are to be trained because they are lower in rank. That is the only reason.
So Supreme Court and High Court judges do not get trained in the Judicial Academy. They don't even have to do a minute.
They never get any training in any academy.
Okay.
Even the lawyers getting into the legal profession have no training whatsoever in any academy. And still, they start teaching these people. And interestingly, anybody imparting training in these academies or judicial academies must have two-prong experience. One is that he should have sufficient experience of the legal profession, either as a judge or as a lawyer at some top position. Secondly, he should be academically sound. Because the unfortunate part is people coming to these places mostly, if they come from teaching line, for example, they come, some professor comes from LUMS or some other big university, he will be lacking in actual experience. So he would have seen only one side of the spectrum. Likewise, the other people would be knowing the court practices, but they won't have that kind of bird's eye view academically, which a professor has. So in Judicial Academy, if you are to train somebody, then you need to have people who have been teachers as well as also in the legal profession. We have a number of people
who can do
in the legal profession who are also teaching, who are also practicing. So, or there have been judges also who have been teaching and who are judges. So, we need to get such kind of people who have a wholesome knowledge of the subject, who have seen subject from all the angles.
Sansab, this brings me to the final question, which is very interesting. Look, the way I look at it, and correct me if I'm wrong, a legal system should comprise of judges, lawyers. But I think one element which is very important, which you just touched upon, which is legal academia. So we touched upon the training academy, which is, I think, an important issue because everybody needs training. I used to work in the IMF training department. I know how important training is. But I think there's another very important element, which is academia. And I find that our legal academia is very, very weak.
Very weak.
There's hardly any
very
legal
weak.
Academia. There's no legal research.
And once a person becomes a judge, there is absolutely no connection with academics anymore. He doesn't go through any institutional training. For example, if we look at the army, if we look at civil services, they have got their administrative staff colleges. Then in the army also, they have got their institutions. They have to pass lots of institutional examinations, and that is how they get promotions from brigadier to major general to lieutenant general. In judiciary, that kind of training is totally missing.
But what about academics? For example, what I find in the U.S.
While I was talking, this occurred to me that our judges are so ignorant that sometimes they start passing orders about which they have no clue that they can't pass such orders. For example, some think that they can pass any order on this face of this earth. And I remember once there was a case in Quetta, and the then Chief Justice was raising a lot of hue and cry that Balochistan's law and order problem is getting worse, and the Attorney General is not taking any interest in these matters, and we will have to pass some order because the Attorney General is not coming and all that. So when I heard all that, so the Chief Justice was, Pakistan was sitting in Quetta, it was Justice Chaudhry. So I decided that I'll go, and in the next morning I was there in the Supreme Court. And as I went and entered the courtroom, the proceedings were on, and the Chief Justice was appalled to see me that I am there, and he said, "Well, you are here." I said, "Yes, sir." So because there was lot of hue and cry in the media that I was not taking interest, so I am here to assist this honorable court. So he said, "Okay, I would like to draw your attention to an order that we passed previously." And he read that order and he said, "Okay, we had issued directions to the Attorney General to do this, 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 and Attorney General has not done." And I had to very respectfully tell the honorable Chief Justice that, "Sir, kindly, will you let me know the law under which you can issue a direction to the Attorney General? Because the little that I know, nobody can issue a direction to the Attorney General. Attorney General doesn't take direction from any judge or a Chief Justice. So if there is any law, kindly point it out." So then he got a bit annoyed and he said, "Even we can't issue a direction to you." Like, "Sir, with respect, I may say, not at all. Your Honor cannot issue any direction to the Attorney General. And it is customary that in most of the jurisdictions like ours, Attorney General is always invited to assist the court. Then it is for the Attorney General whether to accept the invitation or to send one of his deputies, because he is to prioritize his work. He has got not cases only in one court. He may have more important cases in the before a junior judge as compared to a senior judge. Then he may opt to go to the junior judge. So that is his choice." So this basic thing, the Chief Justice did not know that this is the most basic law, that he cannot issue a direction to the Attorney General, yet he was issuing a direction to the Attorney General. So this is what I am telling, that we need to educate our judges, and a great responsibility to educate the judges is on lawyers also, and also on law officers. And they are also failing in this
but
duty.
But there's a third element that also educates judges. I see in UK, US, etc. If you remember all those famous people like Dewey or whatever, so and so, there's so many, I mean, in the US I can think of so many major law professors, you know, who write commentaries on judges, on all kinds of things. So I think legal research is an important way to influence both the judiciary as well as the legal system, as well as lawyers, etc. Unfortunately, our universities don't have legal academia. Our universities don't have legal research. Do you see any way that we can start legal research? Or am I wrong? There is legal research going on. Do we have enough papers on law coming out?
You must give due regard to legal research. And legal research deserves to be given proper treatment and proper respect. So anybody who has done research, who has worked hard, that kind of atmosphere is no longer there in the courts. I wish if you someday just go to the Supreme Court, spend some time there, and you will see that there are hundreds of books lying in front of the judges where judges sit. There are hundreds of book lines, and lawyers come with lots of trays, books filled with trays, and hardly even one book is not opened in the entire proceedings. There is no serious discussion on those ticklish legal issues which have been resolved over the years, or the wisdom that has been evolved. There is no serious, everything is being done hastily in a cursory manner. And sometimes, I mean, the decision hits the target, and many times it doesn't. And this is how the system
no,
is.
No, I've been to the High Court many times, and I've seen this, that I'm always appalled at how quickly the cases are decided.
Yes.
5 minutes, tuck, 5 minutes, tuck. And there's no real argument.
A
no
judge has a concentration span of 4 minutes, 5 minutes,
yeah.
2 minutes, and they just rush through these matters, and they don't apply themselves fully. And the, for them, the reason is that we have got so many cases that we cannot give any time to any one particular case, and result is that they apply their mind to none.
In fact, you've probably seen this. There's a famous judge in America called Judge Judy, who holds case on television every day. Mm-hmm. Every day her courtroom is open to the television, media. And we all watch the cases. It's very interesting that she actually, although it's a lower court, it's not an upper court, she takes great interest in the case. The case is discussed very seriously. All kinds of issues are discussed. Nothing is rushed through. Everything is well documented and very carefully heard. And she's become a popular TV star.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the camera can help. The media can help. There are so many ways, directions to go in. But this has been a very interesting discussion. I've learned a lot. My final question that I ask everybody, or final two questions. Could you suggest some avenues for legal research for young scholars? Because I hope that this podcast will be listened to by young scholars, and they'll be doing their theses or whatever. And I think a lot of good information comes out of these theses, and a lot of discipline comes out of these theses. Could you suggest some good topics to them for working on?
Personally, I am against doing research, generalized kind of research.
Okay.
Because research should be specific and should be confined to a particular case.
That's why I'm asking, what
because
kind of topic?
Because every case has its own facts, and therefore you need research in those areas. Mm-hmm. And for any legal student, if he wants to carry out a generalized research, my advice to them would be to go through some of our judgments of the Pakistan Supreme Court and High Courts on constitutional matters. And those are few judgments which every student must go through.
Okay.
And those 10-12 judgments on constitutional issues, he should meticulously go through each and every page, underline that, and then compare it with other judgments, and then come to his own conclusion.
Okay.
And the conclusion I am telling you, the conclusion that he'll find is that the judicial precedents are so chaotic that over the years, instead of laying down the law, our judiciary and superior court judges have laid off the law. That is the unfortunate part. So once you do this kind of research, honestly,
I think that
fairly,
a very good piece to do.
Justly, when you have done this, then with this research, when we will be equipped with this research, you come to the court, and then the judges are brought into this mind teaser situation, where paradoxical situation, I would say, then only those who are genuine judges will be able to get out of this mess.
I think that will be a very good research topic.
Yes, and then the decision making can streamline the differences, and that can be done through constitution of larger benches, which so far has not been done. The chief justices over the last so many years have not been attending to this problem, and yes, research is needed, and this can be a very useful research.
That's a very good topic. I'm glad you suggested it. I hope somebody takes it up seriously. My final question I ask everybody: can you recommend a book or a movie or something that's influenced you a lot, and that you think that somebody, young person who's studying or whatever, should definitely read or see or whatever? So anything you like. What has influenced you a lot? What do you think is a must for a kid to read or to watch or whatever? I mean, it could be anything, not just a book.
Now, it's a difficult question because...
off the top of your head, whatever comes to mind.
Because the few books that have impacted me was at a very young age, because in subsequent years, whatever I read, it never impacted me. And one of the books that impacted me most in Pakistan scenario or in countries like us was a book that I read that of, by, it was, I think, I've forgotten the name, that was the Animal Farm. George Orwell.
Nice book, lovely book.
So to understand beautiful Pakistan book. Politics and what we are doing, we are still in that state. That I only could think of that book for the time being.
I take your point. I think George Orwell's...
Yes, one more.
Uh-huh.
For a law person, one must read Munir,
mm-hmm.
Justice Munir, on Evidence Act. It's a very comprehensive commentary that he has given on Evidence Act, and it is also read all over India and Pakistan. And for constitutional law, there's an Indian author, he has 26 volumes on the Constitution of India.
26.
I think it is Bindra.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
26 volumes.
26
that's
volumes
that's
he has written. He spent his entire lifetime writing this various volumes. And he has extensively dealt with every subject. For the purposes of research, one can...
Absolutely.
Resort to that book.
Excellent. I think all three are very good recommendations. Thank you very much, Irfan Saab.
Thank you,
sir.
It's
been a pleasure talking to you. We shall continue this conversation further. Thank you.
Soch Bachar ke saath, mera naam Nadeem Ul Haq hai. Aur mera naam Anjum Altaf hai.